Blog Talk Radio.
If it's smooth jazz, then the Jazz Queen and Mike Reynolds are talking about it on Talking Smooth Jazz, your place for all things smooth. Artist.
Hello, Brian. Welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz.
Hello there.
Boney James, welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz.
Thanks so much. It's great to be with you guys.
Slava, thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Music.
This is the Jazz Queen with the Smooth Jazz News Minute.
With the smoothest show on internet radio, your hosts, the Jazz Queen and Mike Reynolds.
Hello, welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz. I just want to say to all of you Cowboy fans out there, congratulations on a win yesterday. That includes my co-host, Mike. Congratulations to you, Mike.
Thanks, Turner. And I know that you had a whole house full of Cowboys fans, too, yesterday.
Oh, yes. My sister, my brother, and my daughter. I took pictures of them and posted it on Facebook. They were ecstatic. They loved it. They loved it. It was a great day for them. Great day. So our guest today is Michael Manson, bassist Michael Manson. We are continuing our Behind the Artist interviews with the sidemen and women of smooth jazz. And Michael is a great example of a sideman coming from Behind the Artist to have his own music and host his headline his own concerts. So he's one. Michael, welcome to the show, first of all.
Well, thank you. Hi, how are you?
We're doing well, good. How are you?
Fantastic.
And Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year.
Now, Michael, I wanted to tell you that when Mike and I were talking about doing this series of interviews with the sidemen and women, you were the first artist I thought about.
Wow.
I think you are a perfect example of that, being a sideman for as long as you were, and then having your own music, headlining your own concert.
Headline, right, sure.
Yeah, perfect example of artists coming from Behind the Artist. So we are so happy to have you on the show so you can be able to tell us, about that experience.
It's my pleasure. It really is. It was a long time, being the sideman thing. That was great. I enjoyed it. Met some wonderful people, and when it was time to move, it was just time to move, and it wasn't without the urging of all the people that I had worked with either. Too. They were like, you need to kind of do this. It was very exciting and very scary at the same time as well.
Oh, I bet. Now, you started out on piano, and your teacher was your future mother-in-law, as I read. who had a bass guitar, actually, and you wanted to play the bass instead of the piano. Now, was that your way of getting out of taking piano lessons? Had you heard the bass before?
No, I had not heard the bass before. And then, yes, it was a way of getting out of piano lessons, and as it turns out, I now play both of them, both piano and bass, but I didn't know how it sounded. I didn't know how to hook it up. I didn't even know how it, how to play it. I just wanted to do something different than play that piano. But now I preach to all musicians that, you should have at least a little piano knowledge in your repertoire, I didn't want to do it. I was rebellious. What can I tell you?
Okay. And then what was your very first gig as a sideman?
Wow. This goes back way, way far. But Ramsey Lewis had a drummer. His name was Red Holt. And this is going back a number of years. But he hired me to play, you know, at the time him and L.D. Young, which was the bass player for Ramsey Lewis, had a group together, and then but there was a gig there L.D. could not make, and I got hired as a sub to come in and play with the famous Red Hulk. You know, it was a straight jazz gig. I mean, it wasn't a pop jazz gig. It was straight ahead, you know, jazz, you know, like Ramsey used to play it. And that was the first, but that was a long, long, long time ago. But I guess the first, you know, rather high-profile gig was with Brian Culberson, you know, in the smooth jazz world, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
It was with Brian Culberson, and I got recruited from Steve Cole. And me and Steve had been playing, you know, the club circuit in Chicago, and he was telling me about a little young boy who was, I think, 20 at the time, and he had made this record in his dorm room at DePaul University in Chicago, and was starting to tour a little bit and starting to get some dates and things of that nature. And up until that time, I'd been playing only gospel music. I mean, just nothing but gospel music. And that was because of my religious upbringing and the way I felt about music, you know, and the way I felt about the Lord and how he had blessed me to do this. So I just wanted to do gospel. But, you know, I was making a switch and took some time and prayed about it. And so that was my first experience, you know, out there in the smooth jazz world with Brian Culberson and Steve Cole. So.
Wow. Now, you mentioned gospel. Now, I know that you started with you started the Chicago State Gospel Choir.
That goes way back, but yes, that was my first study gospel gig, and under Calvin Bridges, an old gospel singer. But I mean, he's still a very good friend of mine now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I see that you played with Tremaine Hawkins and Vanessa Bell Armstrong and
yes.
James Cleveland. So those are some big gospel names right there.
Yeah, we had reached a good state in gospel music. We had reached the pinnacle. I mean, at the time, you know, when I was doing only gospel, I was playing with some of the best artists that were out there. You know, James Cleveland and Jesse Dixon and, you know, had a little stint with Andre Crouch, and you know, just even played on a Winans CD, which was unheard of. I mean, they were, you know, at the pinnacle of their career. It was a wonderful time.
Wow.
Now, I read an interview a while back that you did.
Mm-hmm.
And you said in the interview that you had told someone that you had a CD, and that person seemed to be very, very surprised that you would have a CD because you play bass.
Right.
You remember that interview?
I do.
Yeah.
I do. That's why I'm thankful for smooth jazz and the jazz community, because only in this genre could a bass player actually lead his own group, you know. It just doesn't happen in pop music, you know. Bass, you know, becomes the lead instrument, and people actually dig it. It just doesn't happen. And I must say that, you know, playing bass, you know, even if it's jazz, you know, I don't play saxophone, I don't play guitar, I don't play piano, you know, so there's still some discrimination, but we still have a parent out there, you know. I look at my buddy Raymond and Joel Beasley's out there. You know, we got a couple of folks that we still do out there on the base, you know.
Mm-hmm. Michael, I can hardly hear you.
You can hardly hear me?
Okay, now that's better.
Oh, okay. Maybe I was too close.
Yeah.
To my computer.
That's better.
But yeah, in smooth jazz, you can have a bass player who's leading the group and makes his own records, and that doesn't happen often. But
mm-hmm.
I'm thankful and grateful.
Yeah.
Yes.
And well.
Let me give out the phone number if you have any questions or comments for Michael Manson. Now is your time to call in, 646-716-5485. And I do have a question for you from the chat room. Cheryl B. would like to know, how hard or easy was it to move from being a sideman to being a solo front and center artist?
Okay. It was – how hard was it? It was very difficult. Musically, it was rather easy because I had a lot to say, and I always did have a lot to say. So writing songs came fairly easy. Doing the recording, I had a lot of encouragement. Brian Culberson was an amazing person for me in encouraging me and helping me do what I do. He was one who helped me produce that first record. In particular, the first single that I had, he produced the whole thing. And Kirk Whalum and George Duke and a bunch of other folks were really encouraging and helping me to get out there. But making, and here's the hardest part of the whole thing, changing people's perception of you.
Mm-hmm.
It's still an uphill battle 7 years later, you know.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. It really is. Changing people's perception in that, hey, I know that guy Michael Manson. Yeah, he plays bass. Yeah, he plays for all
mm-hmm.
these people. What, he makes records too? He actually writes songs? They don't know.
Yeah.
And the perception is that you're always playing for somebody when, in fact, you know, I have my own records. I play my own shows. And it's slowly changing, you know, but it's been a process. So that part is difficult. And still is difficult, but I musically I had no problems. I had no problems, you know, being the front guy and having people support me and so on and so forth. That was easy, but changing people's perception, changing the fans' perception who had seen me at all the major jazz festivals, and to actually see me headline a group, you know, it was major. You know, and again, it's difficult changing perception.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, Mike, I just want to ask Mike real fast that, you know, a lot of you guys, we've interviewed, like, said, Mark Quell and a lot of Chris Miscale, a lot of guys from Chicago. Now, has mm-hmm. being from Chicago, has that helped you guys being in such a musical, you know, musically rich town?
Yeah.
Like Chicago, with a lot of you guys coming out from there?
Yes, yes. And you know what? What is good about it is that if you're from here, you know, people are very supportive. You know, I get great support from Steve Cole and Brian Culberson and Mark Quell and Chris have both played, you know, with me and I worked with them and Nick Colleone, you know, that's my good buddy, and, you know, very supportive of each other, and if the opportunity comes up for one of us, you know, we try our best to get, you know, all of our Chicago talent, you know, on that same opportunity. It's not as big as, you know, the musical jazz community is not as big as L.A. It's not as big as New York. So everybody kind of knows each other and knows our struggles and we're trying to get out there. All of us are, and trying to get out there and make a living and bless people with music, you know. So whatever I can do to support somebody else, and I'm sure they feel the same way about me, you know, when they come and play on my records or come in and sit in on a show or whatever, you know, it's just, you know, very supportive.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to your first stage performance when your debut CD, The Bottom Line, came out.
Okay. Wow.
The very first stage performance.
Sure.
Save, you know, the fans and everybody, you know, not looking at you as a headlining your own concert. For you personally, what was it like to do your very first concert?
Wow. It was one of the most exciting experiences I've ever had, really. We had it was a CD release party here in Chicago. George Duke came in, and Kirk Whalum came in, both of them came in, you know, to be a support to me. I mean, just flew in because they wanted to, you know,
mm-hmm.
in Chicago, and the event was sold out. We were all over radio, we were all over TV, we were all over, you know, news and print and everything. And to get up there on stage and actually perform the music that I had visioned in my head months ahead of time was just like a rush that you can't really explain. And it was an amazing experience. And then to have those two people, along with my band, on the stage with me performing my music, you know, just like I had performed their music, you know, so many times before, they were up on stage performing my music, the stuff that I, again, had visioned in my head for months, was just an experience that I really can't explain. It was just that exciting, you know. I couldn't believe it, that I still have the videotape on that. Every so often when I need a little encouragement, I pull the videotape out and check it out.
Man. And then do you remember the first time you heard a song from The Bottom Line on the radio? Where
yes,
were you?
Yes, I do. Yes. I was in L.A. And I was in L.A. and I had rented a car. I was doing a show, and I believe I got there a day early. I think I was doing a show with Kirk Whalum down in Cerritos. And I had rented a car a day early. I got in the car from the airport, turned on the Wave. Paul Goldstein, who was the program director at the Wave, was he was one of the first people to play, you know, any of my music. And mm-hmm. So I was listening to the Wave, and I was riding down what's the name of that street? It's close to Rodeo Drive in Beverly Hills. And I had rented a convertible, had the top down, had the radio blasting, and I was just listening to the Wave and heard my music and nearly jumped out of my skin. It was an amazing experience to hear that for the first time, you know. And here I was in L.A. I wasn't in Chicago. I wasn't in front of my hometown people. You know, I was in L.A. They didn't know me from Adam, but I was listening to Michael Manson on the Wave. Very, very cool.
I can imagine. And
yeah.
So now we're at Upfront, your latest CD.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a question from the chat room about that.
Okay.
On Upfront, you have the creme de la creme playing alongside you. Was that easy to accomplish since you were a sideman first?
It was fairly easy, yes. In that, I went back and asked people who had worked with before, could they play on the record? And I have been always throughout my career been one to give over 150% on stage when I'm performing with somebody, and people get that. You know, the people that I work with get that. And
mm-hmm.
So if you go back to those people and and ask them for, you know, essentially a favor. You know, they're lending their endorsement to your record. There was no problems getting everybody to sign on, because everybody who I'd worked with was happy to do it, you know, and happy to be supportive, you know. And I remember specifically working with Norman Brown, you know, and we had just done the BWB tour, which is the, what is that, Rick Braun, Kirk Whalum.
Yes.
Rick Braun, Kirk Whalum, and Norman Brown. That we had done that tour, and we had worked together, and we had bonded really, really well. And he was like, man, whatever you need on your record, I got you, you know. And so that part was easy, you know, getting everybody together and working out everybody's schedule to perform on the record was a little of an issue. But to get everybody to do it, no problems at all. No problem.
You had a question, Mike?
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, because I just thought of something. You were saying that people did not, you know, when you came from being a sideman to a frontman, people were not really you know, I guess open or didn't see you as a front man. But how did artists see you? I mean, how did they – did you get, like, a favorable, you know, from the artists?
It was very, very cool, actually. Again, we were talking with Norman Brown, you know, because, again, we talked a lot. You know, he would always recollect about, you know, how he got started and the struggles that he went through to get started in the business and how to get out there as a front guy. You know, and Kirk Whalum probably did more for me than any person has ever done in that, you know, even on his shows, you know, I would have a feature spot, you know, headlining on music. He would play along with me. We did that for years. George Duke as well, same way. You know, he would make a little spot, you know, for me to perform my music and to, you know, for, again, just trying to help to change perception, you know. Yeah,
right.
He was a talented bass player, but no, he's got his own stuff. He does his own thing. This is what he does. Check him out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so those two specifically really, really helped change or help fight my battle, I should say, of change of perception, you know. And but they really embraced me as coming in, hey, come on, let's do this. You know, they didn't have any animosity about that.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, let's listen to some music from Upfront. The CD, his current CD is called Upfront. And I know that there some of the songs on this CD are some of the songs from your first CD as well. And
so,
I remember reading.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, basically, there was one that was redone, you know, with a little harder edge, Out of Drive specifically. Was done with a little harder edge. We kind of, you know, played it the way we would do it live, which was, you know, it was great to do. It was so much fun to do. Because, you know, the first Out of Drive was real cool, and it was very smooth jazz, and, you know, and it was cool, but it wasn't live. It wasn't hard-edged, and we wanted to change that and really kind of do it the way we do it.
Okay. All right, well, let's take a listen to Outer Drive.
Thank you.
All right, that was Outer Drive. Mr. Michael Manson, you are the bass man.
Yes, I wanted to ask you, like, so I know that five of the tracks are from just filling it that you've put on this new CD up front. Now, how was the transition from the record label that you were on when you did just filling and going to over to New Groove?
Good question. It was a bumpy road, honestly. The first record label that I was with was Aceful 40, and as business goes, that company went bankrupt. This is about when I was about to release my second CD, Just Feeling It. In fact, the day that I was submitting it for just turning it in, ready, getting it ready for airplay and all that kind of stuff, it went bankrupt. So that caused a little wrinkle. And 215 was the record label that picked up the second record. And then, as luck would have it, this as I was about to do the third record, 215 went out of this.
Wow.
So up front was the new record, and New Groove was just starting. And looking for material, so I just happen to have a good friend who runs that, who ran both 215 and New Groove. His name is Dave Chackler, and so he was like, you know, just bring it on over here, and we'll make it happen over there. So you know, the music business is in turmoil. I mean, quite honestly, I mean, you really can't sugarcoat that. It's in bad shape, you know. I mean, record companies are really, really having a hard time. And, you know, I was just reading a report today where, you know, 95% of all downloads that happened in 2009 were illegal and stolen. I'm like, how did that happen? You know, you know, so we're definitely in the transition for sure, and until the new model comes in for purchasing music, musicians and record labels are in a tough way.
Yeah, we recently lost our. I'm in Las Vegas, and we recently lost our Smooth Jazz station here.
Really, I didn't know this. Oasis is not there anymore.
Yeah, it's gone.
Wow.
You know. I can get on my soapbox about that, but I'm going to leave
that alone. Sure. Well, no. I totally understand the soapbox, and I've lived there for a number of years, so.
Yeah.
I totally understand.
Yeah.
And what I hear, LA is about to go, you know, and.
The Wave?
Yes. The Wave.
Oh, really? I'm not surprised. I am not
surprised.
I'm not surprised either.
I'm not surprised.
Either
I mean,
LA and San Diego. I'm looking for them to be next. I am not surprised. Okay.
Well, honestly, you know, my opinion, you know, I love the San Diego station. I think they're great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as far as radio stations are concerned, you know, I think one in Seattle and one in San Diego are two of the best in the country that are left.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, I can go get on my soapbox and let you know, the nuts and bolts about the music. But, you know, I can see the handwriting on the wall. And, you know, I hope it goes back. I hope it goes back to what it used to be. You know, I don't know if you remember back that far back to 1985, 1986, where we actually had, you know, contemporary jazz that was being played that was like hidden, you know, like not watered down, not music for background, this music was to touch you, it was to compel you to listen, and honestly, you know, I've never wanted to be anything but that, you know, just because my music has fallen into the smooth jazz genre, that's a good thing, you know, but my music, I want it to be compelling, I don't want it to be the music that you whistle while you work type of music.
Mm-hmm.
I've never wanted that. you know.
I hear you.
I want the music to impact you and to impact your life and to impact, you know, to impact your ears, and impact, and more importantly, impact your spirit, you know. And
yeah.
Anything less than that to me is not good music, you know. But that could be in any genre, but it has to do that, you know. And if you don't have music that's doing that, if you got wallpaper music, then, you know, people don't really care about it, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's so true. And let me ask too, Mike, with the loss of all of these stations that we're having, how is it impacting the way that you market your material and get it out to the fans so that they know that you have a new CD out and that you're going on tour? How do you use the new way of media now?
Yeah, it's all computer-based, digitally driven, you know. Well, I totally see the time where we don't make CDs anymore. You know, I totally see that. You know, I don't know how far it is away, but already right now it's going to be a download type of situation where, you know, you make your music, you get it to the people that you market to, you market over the internet, you know, you make use of jazz websites such as yours and you know, like smoothjazz.com and mm-hmm. you know, cjazz.com and all kinds of other places that, you know, you just hit them, you know, and let them know that that you have stuff available. And if you pay anybody for marketing, those would be the people that you pay, you know, where you go directly to the consumer through these websites. And, you know, and Facebook is wonderful. You know, you get the word out through Facebook, although that's becoming crowded as well, you know, because everybody wants to be there. But, you know, find ways to make yourself special and let you know, to let people know that you have something new.
All right. Well, let's listen to another song. I'm going to play the title track. And after this song, I want to ask you about George Duke.
Okay, sure.
All right, this is Upfront.
Thank you.
That was the title track from Michael Manson's Upfront CD. We are talking to Michael Manson. If you have any questions or comments for him, please call 646-716-5485. So, Michael, you mentioned George Duke earlier.
Mm-hmm.
He was instrumental in you playing at the Montreal Jazz Festival early in your career.
Yes.
How did you meet him?
Actually, it was through Kirk Whalen.
Okay.
Back in, 1997, we did the Gospel Court in the Jazz Chapter 1. And George just happened to be on the live recording that we did. And we really, really bonded. And I've been working with him ever since. And it's been a wonderful experience. He's been definitely the biggest mentor that I've had. I mean, I want to play like he plays. You know, I want to handle my business like he handles his business. I mean, it's because he's way more than just a technical artist. I mean, you actually feel what he plays. You know what I mean? Yes, he is very technical. Yes, he's one of the baddest cats out there, if not the baddest pianist out there. But you feel what he plays, you know. And that's what I want people to do. I want people to feel what I play. And so that was in 1997 when we first met. It was just a bond that just happened. And from that, we did the Montreal Jazz Festival on tour, which allowed me to work with everybody in the business who I really, really wanted to work with, like Al Jarreau and Joe Sample and Roberta Flack. Who else was on there? Well, George and David Sanborn. It was just, we did 24 cities. Everybody just kind of working together. Layla was on the gig as well, Layla Hathaway. And, it was just a wonderful experience. I mean, Kirk Whalen jokes with me and says, hey, after that gig, you could have just retired, man. You played with everybody now. So. But it was a wonderful musical experience and one that I'll never forget.
Wow.
Hey.
Now, Mike, I want to ask you about another person who was very, very influential in your decision-making for your music, and that's your wife. I want to ask you about your wife. Now, I read that you, before anything leaves the studio, she has to stamp that sound approval on it. Tell us about that, man. Come on now.
Oh, man. That is so much the truth. I mean, she is my biggest cheerleader, fan, whatever else you want to call it, but she is my biggest critic as well. It's like, it's got to pass inspection before I lose the studio. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, she's a very accomplished musician herself, and all right, and a wonderful, wonderful songwriter and singer and piano player as well. But so she has an ear. You know, she's just not the fan listening to the music. You know, she can give me direction as well. You know? And so yeah, she's quite the critic sometimes, you know. But I need that though because I'm not right about everything, you know.
Right.
I'm not right about everything. I'm not right about all the things that I do and some of the stuff that I come up with, could be whack in a word.
Yeah.
I need somebody to tell me, hey, that's whack. Let's put that out there.
Oh, man. Yes, indeed.
And how long
yes.
have you been married?
22 years.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. Congratulations. Now, I read that Al Jarreau is your favorite vocalist in any genre. Have you met him?
Oh, yes. We worked together, again, with the Montreal Jazz Festival.
Okay.
We worked, and also I've done some Christmas arrangements for him.
Okay.
So we worked very, very close together on those arrangements, you know. He needed some things done for, like, a 40-piece orchestra, and I do orchestrations as well. So, actually, my college degrees are in orchestra conducting, not bass playing. And so on the side, I do orchestrations for different people, orchestra arrangements. And So I did some for Al, and we have a chance to work together on some Christmas projects. So, yeah, he's an amazing guy, and he's six. I want to say he's 60. He's got to be mid-60s now, and just a ball of energy. And you know, I want to be that. You know, I want to be that excited about what I do on a daily basis when I'm that age.
Okay, so tell us about some upcoming projects. Are you working on any new music?
Oh, it is all like popcorn. I'm working on my fourth CD right now.
Okay.
I'm out of my skin, excited about it. I mean, I worry that it's going to be really good for smooth jazz, but I don't know if you want to talk about it. But,
I can't hear you.
Okay, sorry. Can you hear me better now?
Yes.
Okay. I want to say it's going to be really, really good smooth jazz, but I don't know. It's going to be really, really, really good music, shall I say.
Okay.
And it's going to be hard and funky, and I'm excited about that. I really am excited. I just finished a Christmas project that my wife wrote, actually, and it's been climbing up the gospel charts over this last Christmas season. So that has been my focus for the last 3 or 4 months. And I started on my fourth CD earlier last year in 2009. Now I'm getting back to it and going to be finished within the next couple of months. And it's an exciting time. It really is. Really exciting.
Okay.
Aside from that, you know, I'm doing some touring. I got a chance. I'm going to be working with Alex Bunyan and Schultz. We're going to be co-headlining in Davenport for a Valentine's Day show. Also working on, going to be at Seabreeze. I guess that's in Tampa, I believe, or Clearwater, something like that.
Yeah.
So I'll be down there doing a headline spot down there. Going over to Japan with George, and going over to Tokyo with George, and gonna be working on some recording out there as well in Tokyo.
Okay.
And there's a record company in Tokyo that is very interested in Michael Manson's music, so I'm really excited about that. And so we'll be signing a deal out there as well.
All right. Well, congratulations. All right.
Thank you.
Now, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was trying to think of what else was going on. I think that's the basic thrust of everything right now. The basic thing is getting that new record out. And got some really nice special guests, and not going to tip my hand on that yet, but it's going to be really, really, really cool.
Okay. All right.
Now, I wanted to ask you. I know that you're a very spiritual person and everything. Now, when you said that the next album it was just gonna be good music, will there be any gospel music on there? Gospel tunes?
No, I don't think so. I may throw something on there, you know, at the last minute, you know, if I need something, you know. I consider all that I do gospel, and
okay.
You know what I mean. I think gospel music per se is not a specific genre. You know what I mean. It's like, I mean, there's some things that you hear and you say, okay, that's gospel music. I think what I do is spiritually led. It's God led, and so in that sense, it's all gospel to me.
Okay.
You know?
All right.
So
I like that.
Whether it's called something, you know, whether you label it as something, you know, and whether it turns up on smooth jazz radio, that's fine. That's all good. But it's still gospel to me. You know?
All right. I'm like Mike. I like that too. All right. These next five questions are non-artist musician questions. These are questions for Michael Manson, home from the tour, off the road, just chilling and relaxing at home.
I don't know what
okay.
that's like. What is that like? What is that?
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
Well, that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, it is a blessing for sure.
Okay. All right. The first question, your favorite TV show?
I'm Sim old head, so The Cosby Show.
Okay. And is there a soap opera in there anywhere?
No. Although I must admit, I used to like, when I was in college, I used to like All My Children.
Okay.
But that's been years ago.
See, men like men. There are men that watch soap operas.
Yeah.
So that's why I threw that in there. Okay, your favorite color?
Blue.
Your zodiac sign?
Leo.
Football or basketball?
Football, any day of the week.
Okay. And number five, your favorite all-time anything?
Favorite all-time anything? Favorite all-time anything, meaning?
It could be food, TV, music, but it just your all-time favorite.
My all-time favorite. I tell you, my all-time favorite person I had a chance to meet over the summer, and I listened to him, and he's just, I'm his biggest fan. Quincy Jones.
Wow.
Yeah. We played Montreal Festival in Switzerland over the summer, and I got a chance to hang out with a Chicago homeboy, and I was out of my mind. I was like, I can't believe I was sitting there chilling with him. And I mean, he's done everything in entertainment, you know, from music to TV to everything, you know. And he's my favorite, my absolute favorite.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much, Michael. Mike, do you have any other questions for him?
I know that Mike used to play football for the Chicago Heights Broncos.
Yes.
And I just want a football question real fast for you. Who you got going to the Super Bowl? I just want to ask you that.
As soon as the Cubs go through the World Series.
Oh, man.
I tell you, he's a diehard football person,
I'm telling you. Right. And once I seen that Mike played football, you know, semi-pro football, I said, okay, well, he's my kind of guy, you know.
Right.
Football and jazz. That's right. Football and jazz.
That's all it is, man. Is there anything more than that? No, there's nothing more than
that.
My goodness. That's
right.
I'm glad when football season is over with.
No, it is not. We're hanging on by a thread here. Come on.
That's right.
That is too funny. Well, Mr. Manson, thank you so much for the opportunity to talk to you today. We have thoroughly enjoyed you. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thanks for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
And we look forward to seeing you on the road. Hopefully you'll be in Vegas or D.C. sometime this year. So we look forward
to seeing you. Yes, I want to get down there to Vegas. Actually, my friend down there, Lynn Briggs, is she still down there?
Yeah.
I don't know, because she was at the Oasis.
Lynn is right. She was at the Oasis, but I think now she's on vacation or something in L.A.
Oh, okay. Cool. All right, we'll see you out there.
All right, sir. Thank you very much.
All right, Mike. You have a good one now.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. All right, that was Michael Manson. Check out his current CD up front on his website, michaelmanson.com. And, wow, that was great. I enjoyed him. All right, Mike. Let's see. Next week we have keyboardist Gail Johnson. She is the music director for Norman Brown. A side woman, our first side woman. So she also has her own music as well. So I'm looking forward to talking to her. She's next Saturday. And then next Sunday is an indie artist, a singer named Michael Ross. So we're looking forward to talking to them. Tune in for that. Any last words, Mike?
Not so much, Terry. Just like I said, everybody, you know, continue to follow the show. Like I said, we bring you guys some of the best artists, men and women of smooth jazz. And like I said, we're going out to try to, you know, get everybody whoever you guys want on the show, if you guys have an artist that we don't know about that you would like us to interview, you know, you can hit me or Terry up on Facebook or, you know, hit us on our emails, and we'll definitely, you know, try to get the person or group on to the show. But we just reached out to a young lady from Japan, and she'll be on the show February 7th. Her name is Oto, and I'm very excited about that interview because that's going to be a nice interview. So we want you guys to tune in for that. She'll have her translator calling in. And it's like I said, we're trying to bring you guys the best in the world, not just in the country, but in the world as far as smooth jazz goes. Because like Mike mentioned earlier, you know, he didn't even know that the jazz station was gone. And that's what happened. They just cut them off so fast that people don't even realize that the stations are gone. So we have to do what we can do to keep the everything going, you know. That's so true.
All right. Thanks to Anisha, Boney Fan Carol, Cheryl B. for coming into the chat room. Also to Antoine. Thank you guys for stopping by. I am going to close with another song from the CD. You have been listening to Talking Smooth Jazz with the host, Jazz Queen.
And Mike Reynolds.
And this is She's Always There for Lana. And Lana is Michael's wife. We look forward to talking smooth jazz with you guys next week. Have a smooth day.
Hello.